Hey, it's Anne here, wanting to thank you again for taking time to give us a listen. We really do hope that you find these episodes informative and hopefully a little entertaining, too. This week's episode starts off with personal updates about what we've been doing with our COVID time. And then, in a new segment, we discuss some education news. We hope to bring you some information about the laws and the regulations that are currently being discussed federally and at the state level. Today, we talk about the $355 million and some change that California received from the federal government to help with the education issues due to the COVID pandemic. Then, in our main topic, Jen, Sharon, and I get into a discussion about state testing, every teacher's favorite time of the year. Or maybe for some of you, I shouldn't be reading that with a sarcastic tone. You might actually like it. When doing research for this topic, I started with researching who even writes the questions for this test. Of course, it occurred to me that the questions are based on the Common Core. So then I had to find the backstory to how the Common Core even came about in the first place. What I discovered was surprising to me, and maybe to you as well. It explains a lot about why so many people were against the Common Core to begin with. I will be posting the links to the show notes on our website to all of the resources that we use to help us put together today's episode. So, I hope you enjoy today's dialogue. We would love it if you would rate us on iTunes or any of the other platforms you use to listen. Hit that subscribe button and download our episodes for later listening, and ask all your friends to listen too. Also, please leave us some comments about today's episode and your opinions about state testing or any of the other topics you'd like to hear discussed or questions you have about what it's like to be a teacher. We really look forward to extending the conversation with you. Be well, and now here's the show. Separated from the world, but giving each other some information and talking about what's going on in the world of teaching and what's going on in our own little living rooms right now. So it's Anne here with
Jen's here in my living room.
Jared's here
again.
I'm still in my pajamas. I think this is the only day I've stayed in my pajamas this late.
Nice.
That is good. That is awesome. So what's everybody been doing? Just a little quick rundown. What's been going on with you, Sharon? What have you been doing lately to entertain yourself during this time?
Oh, entertaining myself with my house and my yard. I actually got my whole pool area, well, almost all of it. I got the whole back wall done with plants that, pieces that I've stolen from my neighbors, the succulents. Yeah, well, I took some last year and I just plopped them in there with the weeds. And oh my gosh, they're so pretty. This year they have pink flowers.
Are you out there in the middle of the night with your clippers sneaking through your neighbor's?
Yeah.
No, I just go walk by and I'm like, hey, can I steal some of this? I just ripped a whole bunch out, put it on the curb and put free plants. There's only a couple left. People just came and take them.
Well, we finally started phase one of our remodel for the bedroom and the bathroom. So I've been clearing out my hallway and my bathroom have basically turned into a storage unit. So I've been clearing all that stuff out. A lot of purging going on here. Got a lot of stuff to drop off to Goodwill if that ever opens again. But yeah, I've just lots of housework, tons of stuff going on in the house. So keeping me busy. What about you, Ann?
Nothing. I got nothing here. I committed to trying to get up and work out every morning. That's what
good.
I have decided to try to do. But we'll see how long it lasts, So anyway, we got a little bit of news, state news going on, having to do with governor's emergency education relief fund. So we'll talk about that in a minute when we get back. All right, ladies, so let's get into it. We got a little bit of state news going on having to do with the governor's emergency education relief fund. So Secretary DeVos gave $3 billion in emergency education block grants for governors. And of that money, California is supposed to receive like $355 million.
It just seems like that's got to be how our schools are getting funded. Because, I mean, you hear about other districts, not ours, but some other districts where they're just not doing anything.
Well, like I said, you know, I go on a walk every morning with my friend in from Riverside County, and I'm telling her how every week we're documenting every single week, every single kid that's either working or not working. They're not doing anything like that. Nothing. They've got no records of what's been happening these last weeks, month, whatever, of exactly what kids doing what. So, Sharon, I think you are onto something by saying that maybe that's how these funds will be allocated through those that are basically doing their bookkeeping.
Yeah, and because if you don't document it, it didn't happen.
Exactly.
So, I mean, I know it's a pain in the ass for us to, like, keep changing what we're doing and everything, that we could be told the reason, you know, why things are changing. But I that's just my speculation. I think it's just coming from, you know, there's all this money. They got to give it to somebody. How are they going to decide who to give it to? I mean, we're doing a lot of work. They should be giving us money. Yeah. But it bugs me when you listen to the news or something, or you listen to people talk, and they're like, well, I think this and I think that. It's just, and this is just what I think, because I don't have any facts to back it up, which kind of is annoying. So
I don't think, I don't think anybody knows, you know, even our principal, you know, she's, you could tell her frustration every time we have a meeting. She's like, okay, guess what? Now we got to do this. So, you know, she doesn't know either.
I don't know, but it just seems interesting that there's so much money and then people just aren't, how many people are really aware that California received that kind of money and where is it going? Like, where's the accountability on that?
Yeah, I don't know. That would be interesting to see, like, later on. But then, like, LA Unified, right? They're doing a whole bunch of stuff with PBS because all their kids don't have resources for computers and one-to-one ratio and all that stuff, right?
PBS, you mean the Public Broadcasting System television station?
Yes, yes. Okay. So I watched an interview with the leader of both LA Unified and PBS, and they were talking about how they were combining their forces to come up with curriculum that kids could access at home.
Maybe they're giving their portion of their $355 million to PBS or something like that.
Yeah, you know, so I'm wondering, like, I wonder if PBS gets some of that because, you know, they're helping build that curriculum. And that, in my opinion, I think that would be, you know, a good use of some
a
of that money,
investment,
too.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a good use of money because now you've got this partnership with a lot of great curriculum because, you know, PBS has such awesome shit that they show, but okay. That's another possibility of what's happening with some of that.
Well,
that
I just wanted to bring that little tidbit up to people's attention that there is all of this money coming into California, and where is it? Who's getting it? How is it being delivered? We haven't heard anything like that. So that's it for our little news update tidbit. So
it's going into alcohol stocks because all us teachers are buying up all the alcohol.
And Jen once again sums up the information so succinctly. Thank you, Jen.
Keeping it real, people.
Today, we're going to get into talking about state testing, every teacher's favorite time of year. That we all are so excited to get prepared for and work towards during the whole year, and kind of glad maybe this year that it got kind of put by the wayside, you know?
I bet the kids are so glad.
Uh-huh.
I know.
Like when you first, I don't know, when you guys did, you first mentioned it to your students, were they like, really? That's awesome. I know my kids were
Some
like
Some of them
super
have total
excited.
Freaking meltdowns right before. It's crazy.
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
It's been, I think teachers have a total freaking meltdown too, because you realize like, oh my gosh, I have not got all that curriculum done that the kids are going to be tested on. What am I going to do?
Yeah.
You know, what's going to happen? And how's our school going to look? And we're going to be judged. And I think
a lot of reflection anxiety for sure.
isn't our school already like in trouble? Aren't we already on that?
Yes.
List? Yeah. We're on the state doo-doo list for sure.
Yeah. So anyways, it's kind of interesting. So I thought when I first started thinking about this, I thought it would be a good idea to talk about like, where did state testing even come from? What did it happen? So I'm just going to kind of roll through this brief synopsis of where it all started. And so basically back in from the 1840s to 1875, schools were like just testing everybody by like verbal conversations and having talks with them to see if they were making the standards. But then they decided to create something more formal so that because it was so hard to do it, you know, orally, that if we did something written, you could test more people at the same time. And the Industrial Revolution needed education for the masses, not individuals. So this really worked with that. I guess factories wanted some people who could read, maybe.
Oh, I wonder why. Weird. Because when I buy stuff from IKEA, I don't know what language that is, okay?
It's hieroglyphics.
Yeah, it is. It totally is.
In 1890, the system of common entrance examinations began. That is what became acceptable for colleges and professional schools started to use those. They went to standardize so that like colleges didn't have to compare like the test from one school to the test from another school. So they standardized it so they could all look at one test, save time, and see how all the kids compared to each other on that. And then eventually the college entrance board was established in 1901 at that point. Then they started with intelligence testing came into play in 1905 with Alfred Binet. And those of you who are special ed teachers might know the name Binet because you still give out the Stanford Binet test. And that's kind of where it came from there. Between 1908 and 1916, they started actually doing the testing for specializing in arithmetic, reading, and language ability. They even tested handwriting out of there.
Well, what were they testing before that then?
They were just testing the general.
What were they orally, what like were their oral exams? What were they asking?
I don't know. Who knows what they were saying? Maybe just general knowledge at that time. But I guess it was all kind of standardized. But I thought it was interesting they were testing handwriting. We don't even do that.
Wow. They don't even learn handwriting anymore.
They don't.
Sorry, go ahead.
Some schools do.
Some do. A lot don't, yeah.
Then the College Board starts making their own examinations. And that's when they started incorporating performance type questions such as arithmetic. They did that.
Essays, right?
Essays.
Sight translation of foreign languages.
So, well, like, okay, just question in here. I did not research this, but who makes up the College Board? Who's the College Board?
During this time?
It's probably a group of people who are heads of universities that got together and were maybe voted in or something. That would be my guess. But
isn't the College Board now just a testing company?
No, the College Board is actually, it's not a testing company. I believe it is still a group of people that are either voted in.
Oh, a nonprofit group of universities and other educational organizations.
There you go. Thank you, Google.
That still doesn't tell you anything, though.
Right? But that's who it is, right? All right. But here, I thought this was interesting. By the fall of 1920, there was nearly 500,000 of these new state tests, these college entrance tests that were put out there. In 1930, it was called Terman's Intelligence and Achievement Test. And then later that became known as the Stanford Achievement Test, or the SAT. So that started.
And how much did that cost?
Yeah, well, it was very profitable for the World Book Company because they sold millions of those in 1930. Believe it or not, even way back then in 1922, John Dewey was complaining about testing and how it is making people more concerned with averages and numbers and percents, taking away from education and starting to get into problems with bias. The original test was 90 minutes and it was 315 questions and it tested vocabulary and basic math. That's exactly where they started doing those analogies. Do you remember that? With hand is to finger as foot is to those kinds of things. That started in 26s, right?
Then they were still like that when I took them. They were like that when you took them, right?
Yeah, no, that's what they're saying is that's how long ago that started.
was back then, right?
No, you guys are just old.
Yeah, I think they're different now. I don't know if they're the same as they were.
It's been a long time since I've taken an SAT.
Hey, were you guys taking your SAT with chisel and rock or what?
Yeah.
Chisel and rock. Uniform. I just think uniform. Okay, thanks. We're writing on papyrus paper. Good Lord. Okay, so then by 1930, multiple choice tests were like firmly entrenched in schools. In fact, in the University of Iowa had their first major nationwide state testing program for high schools that started in 1929.
Oh, wait, those are the tests that I took when I was in elementary school.
The Iowa
test.
Yes. Yeah. The problem was, as they said, that these kinds of tests really just didn't show anything. They showed the ability of kids to memorize, which is kind of what we teach kids to do when they take test taking skills, right? But they went with those tests because they were easy to grade. And you could give them out to masses of people at the same time. So it was really easy to, and that's basically what it was. That it was just basically people were complaining that it really wasn't showing what kids knew, but rather how well they could memorize and how well they knew how to take the test. So by the late 1930s, that's when the Iowa state tests went nationwide. And then in 1965, the Elementary and Secondary Education Act, which is still in effect today, the ESEA, started a new way for increased use of norm reference tests to evaluate schools and their school programs. That was what it was for. It was norm test, but the problem was the norms were based on a small amount of previous test taker. And it wasn't even based on like a large test group. The norms were on just a very small specific group of kids. And then of course
probably the writer's kids.
Yeah.
Hey, I need to take this test. Get some feedback on this test from school. Yeah. Let me have your kids down, take this study, test, take this so I can test. Have a norm.
Yeah.
Then in 2001, that's when we got the No Child Left Behind Act from the Bush administration, and that is where you ended up with state mandated testing. Behind. That's where that came in from there. And now every student, because of that, every student from each grade is tested now for that.
Yeah, 3 to 8, yeah.
Yeah. So in 2002, the No Child Left Behind law required every child from grades 3 to 8 to be tested every year. And this is the part that made people really angry, is because they said by 2014, every single child had to be proficient. I was like, who? Yeah. Who thought that was a good idea?
Pretty sure I'm not even proficient. Come on.
Oh man. Okay, so my memory is a little shaky on this, but wasn't that all like ranked by percentage? With the No Child Left Behind test, that was all norm reference testing also, right?
Yes.
So and didn't they compare them to like the same group of people that were taking them each year, or did they also have a small sample size that they considered the norm?
This is the interesting part. So when the Common Core came out, they were urged to try to field test it, but they never did. They just put it out there without any field testing. So they didn't know if the standards really worked in real classrooms or not.
Yeah, that was a bunch of crap. No, and they did all that behind closed doors. Nobody even knows
that's
like,
right. Well,
what was going on there. Like there was no transparency. Let me just put it that way. We're all about transparency in teaching.
Transparency.
Yeah, it wasn't even. But the whole reason that they came up with the Common Core anyway is because each state had its own state standards that they were testing. Mm-hmm. And colleges were like, you know, we have to, you know, how do we compare? So the idea was to put together a Common Core, and the idea behind the Common Core was supposed to be like equalizing. Like,
yeah, well, that didn't do that matter. For sure.
It didn't matter if you were poor or rich; you were all learning the same thing. So
yeah, but Common Core is only based on reading and math.
Right. That was the other part. That's kind of a problem. The other subjects aren't considered as important, right? So many of the subjects got put by the wayside and kids went into intervention and after intervention program in order to get their scores up to meet the goals, the AYPs, the average yearly progress of those things, right? So that was-
Yeah, that sucked.
Yeah.
What was interesting to me when I started researching this, when I started going into this, the first thing I thought about is like, well, who writes the questions that are even on the cast?
Oh, this is where it gets heated. This is good. Keep going.
And the questions, the California State Board of Education, okay, they're chosen by the governor. He picks those people. And they're mostly university profs. There is also a couple of high school teachers on there. And there is also a student on the State Board of Education. A high school student. But there is a flyer that goes out every year. I didn't know if you guys knew this, where you can sign up to get on the committee that actually writes questions. And then you go through a whole thing of where you learn like how to write the questions and then you write the questions. But then the state board still reviews the questions and they can either accept them or not. But then I thought to myself, well, the questions have to be based on the Common Core. So mm-hmm. Where did the Common Core come from? And that's when I feel like I opened up a whole can of worms.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was back in 2009 when this group got together to do this. And there was 27 people, most of whom were not educators.
No.
Who got together to do that.
It kind of seems to be like how everything goes for us.
Right?
Everything gets written by, you know,
history
why?
History will repeat itself.
Well, and you know why? Like, I mean, even if you had let's face it, even if you had the opportunity to be like involved in writing that, do you have the time? Like, how would you possibly have the time as an educator, even if you had the opportunity to do that? I don't know. Maybe if you're the Energizer Bunny.
Well, I think you're actually given release time to go participate in that.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, maybe we should look into that.
Yeah.
But most of the people on that board were people in the testing industry, correct?
A lot of them were part of the people who had a stake in producing and selling the tests. Yeah.
Book publishers, you know, this test has to be done on computers. So guess who else was on that board? All the computer companies, right?
Well, there were some people that were involved in that and they only had just a few teachers. I don't think they had any early elementary school teachers on the board because I know that after the state standards, after they came out, the kindergarten, first, second grade teachers were like, these standards are ridiculous. This is well beyond the developmental age of the kids that are that you're trying to test at this level. And their idea was, well, you push them and then they're going to rise to it, you know, to do that. But that was part of the problem. And then the other thing that I thought was really kind of interesting was they were supposed to be based on what's called college and career readiness standards. Those were supposed to be written first. And so this group got together and presented it to the state, said this is what it was going to be based on. And those college and career readiness standards hadn't even been developed yet. But they did manage to write college and career readiness standards for English. But when it came to doing the college and career readiness standards for math, they never could agree. So those were never written. So this Common Core standards for English are based on college and career readiness standards. But the math ones are just not. They were just written. In fact, if I went and checked it, I went on our state Common Core website, and there are no college and career readiness standards for math. There are for English, but there are none for math. So that was, I thought, was another thing, because that was how it was advertised. These were going to be based on what kids needed in order to be ready for college and ready for careers, but they never developed them for math. So anyways, that was how the Common Core got started. And there's just so many things that are kind of crazy with the Common Core. What's your feeling
right now?
I don't know.
It kind of makes you mad that we push so hard for this, but over time they have found that there hasn't really been that much improvement.
Yeah, done.
There's a study that I read, hold on, where it's come out that after 4 years, because of Common Core, the percentages are going down. And the crazy thing to me about Common Core, they don't even, all kids take the same test. Our special needs kids take the same tests that, you know, our accelerated kids take.
That's dumb.
Fine. That is like, that's crazy.
Well, it also seemed like Common Core like came in like a tornado. Just kind of,
yeah, you woke up and all of a sudden one day it was here.
Yeah, here it is. Everybody's going to do this. And especially with the math and like shifting the way the math is taught.
I think what a lot of this testing has done is taken away from the teacher's ability to determine the curriculum.
Yeah. And then you're teaching something, at least this was my impression with my children when this happened. It's like they're teaching this new stuff a new way and they're not comfortable with it. And so if they're not comfortable with it and they don't know it like backwards and forwards, they're not teaching it very well.
Yes, totally. I mean, if you want to get into the pros and cons. Remember when Common Core hit, we had some teachers that are like, early retirement, I can't even wrap my own head around this. I'm not doing this.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
That was one of the complaints about it, that when the federal testing, all this came in and the standardized testing, teachers began to get like really feeling of demoralization and they started leaving the profession. And guess what comes in? New inexperienced teachers, right, to take their place. And then, because not only that, the inexperienced teachers are lower, they don't cost as much money, right? A lot of the poor schools lost their teachers because the teachers wanted to go to schools where their AYP scores would be higher, because in the beginning, so many teachers were being judged by the scores of their kids. And I remember that they were actually giving out monetary awards to teachers
whose
classes made a certain number of progress.
But that was bullshit too, because they took your scores and then they took your next year's scores. Well, those aren't the same fucking kids.
True.
Yeah, if you want to evaluate growth, why are you looking at my classroom that I had last year and those kids' scores, and my classroom that I have this year and those kids' scores?
Right, that makes no sense.
That doesn't make any sense at all.
You have a total different population.
What are you comparing? And I mean, if they're given the data for everybody to the military, I'm sure they can track their kids' scores from one year to the next. And you can look at the kids' growth instead of the kids in a classroom that weren't in that classroom last year. It doesn't make any sense.
That's true. That is funny that is how it is done. And then you get your entire school gets judged by that, right?
Yeah.
So
why would you want to work for a low performing school if you're going to get a monetary kickback? I would jump ship and go to a school in, you know, a rich suburban area, you know, and teach the kids that are come in already significantly higher or at grade level. Like that's huge turnaround for schools. That's terrible.
And it's all based on the state testing, you know?
So I found what I was looking for real quick here. I'll read this. Cause I think Sharon, this is what you saw too. Okay. So a new large scale study by the federally funded Center for Standards Alignment, Instruction, and Learning found that since the adoption of Common Core, there has been a decline in key test scores. CCL researchers analyzed changes in student performance on the National Assessment of Educational Progress. Okay, so basically the studies from 2010 to 2017. So they assumed Common Core would raise student performance, but it was exact opposite. So what happened during the 7 years after the adoption of the new standards, there were two basic grade levels that they saw the biggest impact on. When analyzing results of multiple states, fourth grade reading achievement actually degressed, went down. And then not only fourth grade performance, but there was a significant negative effect on eighth grade math achievement. Huh. So you see a big hit in fourth grade in regards to English. And a big hit in eighth grade in regards to math.
And we're seeing that at our school, aren't we?
Yeah, you can totally see it. Oh, yes.
That's why we're having a whole new math intervention program starting next year, because
next our kids year. Are,
what, 3 to 4 grade levels below where Common Core says they should be.
Yep. Yeah.
Oh God.
We're completely revamping everything at school just for eighth grade math. You know what I mean?
Well, I, oh God, I'm like so tongue twisted with how to like fix this. It's the problem is so much bigger than your school.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I was thinking? It would be interesting to see, like, before all the Common Core. I mean, obviously, this has been a concern for people for a long, long time. I mean, education's been one of those things that's been on the radar forever. So, you know, it wasn't just No Child Left Behind. It started well before that. Clinton had the Goals 2000 initiative. George H.W. Bush had America 2000, looking for higher standards. You go back to Reagan, he had one called Nation at Risk, that said that if we don't change things in our country, we're going to be, in our education system, we're going to be in a big, it's going to be a big, big problem. And then you get to Carter, and Carter established the Department of Education. You know, so that's where this all came from there. And then we have the new one is Every Student Succeeds Initiative, which is trying to get the power out of Washington and back into the states. And that's what the most recent
I'm conflicted. Here's my confliction. I'm confused because, well, I don't really know which way's better, because we're a nation, so we need to have some cohesiveness as a nation. But our nation is huge. Our nation is so big. It's not like we are, you know, a small country. And I mean, look at California. What did we say? The fifth largest economy of the fucking world, and we're a state. Mm-hmm. Come on. And then you want to get 50 states all on the same page. And I understand why that's important, because we are a nation, and just think about the kids, you know, moving around state to state and everything. So I understand the importance there. But then
that's not realistic.
Yeah, but I also look at, you know, our school, and I look at our needs and our issues and our what we are dealing with, and I look at where I grew up, and the needs and issues there are completely different. Uh-huh. They're not the same organism at all. They're just not. And if you want to make change and you want it to be beneficial to the kids, I think it really needs to be localized.
Yeah. Because
you know what your kids need, even within the district, right? It can't just be district wide. Look at our two middle schools, our two junior highs, completely different, you know, and our needs and their needs are different, and making us do the same thing is not helping anybody.
No. And that's been, you know, that's been one of our biggest arguments within our district, is they're trying to treat both schools equally. And it's like comparing apples to oranges. They're completely different.
Mm-hmm. But on a state testing, right? Supposedly, mm-hmm. you're being compared to schools that are of a like population and like demographic. So as far as like what state standards or what the AYPs are supposed to show, it's supposed to show like how our school compared mm-hmm. to schools that have similar issues as ours. We're not really being compared to the other junior high in our school, in our district. But to your point, they still were trying to have us teach things in the same way, which is kind of like what Common Core is saying, right? Everybody learns the same thing in order to bring equity to all populations. But all populations don't come from the same backgrounds, don't have mm-hmm. the same beginnings, don't have early education.
Don't even have the same resources, you know what I mean?
Right. Don't have the same parents.
Don't have the same access to food.
Yeah.
So that was one of the arguments that I read as far as what they should be investing money in instead of paying money for all of these testing. For example, I know when Los Angeles County School District took $1 billion out of a bond that was meant for improving educational facilities, buildings, and such like that, and they used that billions of dollars to purchase iPads and licenses for the state test. So I mean, what, how much better would it have been to take that $1 billion and invest it in homelessness, or invested in solving food problems, or invested in trying to reduce poverty? Because those are the things that are really keeping kids from performing well on state tests. You know, it's, so I'm not sure that money on state testing is really valuable, being spent like where it's valuable. I think it would be much more valuable to spend that money, you know, that for the licenses alone. Think about the ITs that we pay for that have to make sure the test goes, the time and stuff that it goes onto that, the purchasing of computers, the time away from a classroom that it takes
for
test prep. Wouldn't it have been better to put some of that time and effort and money into resources in order to actually help people improve their quality of life? And that is, you probably get more bang for your buck. And that's my opinion anyway. Let's talk for a minute about what should we do? We just abandon all testing? Is it still important to test? Is there a place for testing?
Yeah. What
should we be doing as, from a teacher's point of view, where should this testing be going?
I think there still has to be testing. I think testing is important.
You need a baseline to compare to. How are you going to know if you've made any progress without some kind of, you know, assessment?
Yeah, I think it needs to be re-evaluated as to how it's evaluated. I really think that they have to be able to take that kid, no matter what state they were in, no matter where they were at, and see what growth they made that year.
Yeah.
Instead of putting it, you know, in each classroom. And it shouldn't be like making it such a high risk or a
high stakes
part of your evaluation. All that does is encourage cheating.
Yeah. Cheating to the test.
Yeah. Or just blatant cheating.
There was, you know? There were scandals from charter schools, right?
It's been in the news.
We are really going back to, you know, trying to teach the whole child and be more conscious of everything that is important. And testing is an aspect of that, but it shouldn't be ranking so high. I mean, if you're going to make it such high stakes, then you better not pass a kid past third grade who doesn't have grade level abilities.
All you're doing
then is skewing everything for the rest of their life and making them a continued failure.
Yep.
You know,
the gaps get bigger. The gaps just get bigger.
Right. Yeah, and that kindergarten and that TK, those should be some high retention years, because those are the best times to do it, right? Because the kids 100%. Are little. Yeah, when they're very little, when they first enter school, and if their skills are not up to par, that's when you keep them back. And it's like, you know what? My mistake. We started you, you know, we didn't do the right thing to get you going. It's beforehand or something. I don't know. I just feel like that's the time to do it. You know, there's such a huge range of differences in those young years in kindergarten. You think about what a year means to a five-year-old versus what a year means to a 12-year-old and the difference in skills. So that kindergarten, first grade, second grade, you should be constantly having kids repeat those grades, and it should not be a shameful thing.
No,
it should not be. There should be no blame and no shame. It's just, that's when those skills need to be established. And if we put our money there and we're able to do that, I think that the entire process would be improved.
You definitely wouldn't have kids in seventh grade that are still reading at third grade level.
At third grade level. Taking the state testing
at seventh grade level.
At seventh grade level, yes.
Yeah.
Right? I think if you're going to do, if you want some kind of measurement that's accurate or more accurate, then you give the test at the beginning of the year. And then you give the exact same test at the end of the year. And you see if there's any growth.
Yeah, you could do that.
That'd be one way you could definitely do that if you wanted to do it. And then you could individualize it more. You could say, oh, well, this, he still or she still, they still need help with English, they're behind on that, or their processing skills for math are still not where they should be. You could make it more prescriptive, which is what they're saying now, right? That we're supposed to look at the data and then we're supposed to alter our teaching for that data. But once again, it's for the entire seventh grade or the entire eighth grade, you know, or those specialized populations, but it's so generic, I think, more than it is prescriptive.
Well, I think if you're going to do it prescriptive, like you want to do it, you don't have the ability in a regular traditional school day, because you've got your kids for what, 40, 50 minutes, and you've got all of them. And by the time you get them in, get them settled, you know, get your group going, get around to this group, get around to that group, you know, the period's over.
That's over. If you even done. Get that far.
Yeah. And they're out the door and you're like, eh, I only got to two groups. I didn't get to my third group or whatever you're doing.
One of the problems with the Common Core is it was developed in 2009 and has not been reviewed or revised since then, because the group who did it is gone.
There's no group to revise it. There's nothing put in place to revise Common Core. Absolutely nothing.
So it's 10 years old.
Yeah.
And the other problem is if there are, like, for example, with the early elementary school standards, there is no one for them to go and complain to say, hey, these are unreasonable.
Mm-hmm.
There's no way to revise it. So if they're going to do this, then they need to, like, revise regularly. They should look, there should be some process in place to go through the standards and look at them, update them, change them as needed to coincide with whatever new developments there are in the world. I think we need to stop using the testing for rating and ranking people. If you put that away and instead
that's dumb.
Yeah, if you just use it more as a, like, how are we doing?
Yeah. And look at it from a, like, okay,
Guidelines as a roadmap. Where are you going to go? Yeah.
Yeah.
I understand they have to put the scores out, right, for the public to use, but mm-hmm. they're put out without any real explanation mm-hmm. of populations that are being served in those particular schools.
Yeah, they're so misconceiving, for sure. I think
that parents look at that and they don't go and research it. They just go, oh, this school is a low-performing school and this school mm-hmm. is a high-performing school. I want my kid to go to this school. And that's where, I mean, this is the argument for vouchers, right? That parents should know best for their child, and they should have the choice if they want their kid to go to a higher performing school. It shouldn't matter where they live. They should have the right to send their child to that school, you know, and that's the rationale behind vouchers, because, you know, obviously the people who can afford it can go into those higher performing areas, people, because they're
tied to socioeconomics every time.
So let me ask this. If you're in a low socioeconomic group and you have parents who are not educated, who are working their butts off to make ends meet, who aren't necessarily home with you in the evenings, is sending their child to a school that's in a higher socioeconomic group going to make that big a difference?
Maybe. Yeah, I mean, okay, let's look at it from a kind of a parent perspective. Okay, this was me with my children. Their home school was a lower socioeconomic school than the school I sent them to. Same district, but at the lower socioeconomic school, you know, my kids were kind of like average. And then in the higher socioeconomic school, my kids were a little bit below average. And so they got reading intervention. They got math intervention. They got help to increase their skills. And they did not get that at the lower socioeconomic school because they weren't part of the lower percentage.
Oh, interesting perspective. Mm.
So it, and I definitely think it helped my children because they perform at and exceed grade level now. And they were not doing that at the beginning of their education. My key thing for if you really want to improve everything is you got to go back to that early elementary and you got to catch everybody there. You've got to catch everybody there. And then you need another one a few years later. So maybe you do third grade, and then you do sixth grade, and then you do ninth grade, right? If you do it every 3 years where you're like, we're making sure that you've got these skills before you move on, I think we would be better off than just saying, here's your test score this year, here's your test score last year, and
so
going that way.
What are we going to conclude here then on state testing, on testing in general then? What is your...
Well, what we have in place now definitely isn't doing its job, that's for sure.
What do we do, or what should people be demanding?
Well, like we said, it needs to be closely looked at. If we're going to keep state testing, it needs to be looked at. It needs to be revised continuously. And as we said, that's a huge problem. There's not even a group that does that. So I think that's your first problem, is that this test it's not realistic and it's outdated and it needs revision.
And I think the other thing is that it shouldn't be used to judge a school.
Evaluate, right.
Yeah, you know.
Just like we said, it should be a guideline of which path comes next.
When they post those test scores with an evaluation of a school, they also need like a survey from the kids. How much support do you feel you get from your teachers? You know, and what that the social climate is, that support that those kids get, and that should be in there as well, I think, and the community feel. So that's super important as well.
I just don't think it really judges what kids know. I mean,
it doesn't at all.
I think another problem,
you know, you've had those kids that sit there and just bubble everything in because they just don't want to do the test. I mean, you know, and then you've got your special needs kids. They're all taking the same test. It's so
above that is the kind of people we need to be producing are not people who know stuff. We need to have people who are able to use imagination and creativity with knowledge. And the test doesn't really give you an example of how kids think, right? It doesn't show you how well they can problem solve. You know, it doesn't show you how well they can put together resources or figure out an answer to a problem in a creative way. I don't know how you test that. But in the future, you don't really need to know stuff. I can go look up math problems on my phone.
You need skills to be able to find good information.
Yeah, but you still need to learn. You still need to learn stuff and memorize stuff.
Well,
that's how you're
going
to connect those neurons to actually be able to do the problem solving later.
But is that what you want?
Yeah, but these tests aren't going to show if those neurons are connected.
No, you're right. Yeah.
Not that we shouldn't have some way of marking some kind of progress to kind of see where you can make your programs better and stronger, but to judge an entire school by that and penalize a school, when the population, like especially in our school, our population and the type of kids that are there change every year.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like you said, Sharon, to judge a school by what they did last year and then comparing it to this year, it's an entirely different group of kids.
Especially when you have a school that has 2 years like ours.
Right. Yeah, I know.
2 years.
So the eighth grade can judge how well the seventh graders did, I guess.
Oh, man. I don't know.
Ay, ay, ay. I'm going to start teaching eighth grade so they can't judge. That's it. I don't know that we, you know, I think the suggestions, let's kind of just summarize our suggestions here, was that testing needs to be not high, such high stakes.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That,
yep.
What else?
More evaluatory. Is that a word?
Like diagnostic?
It is.
Yeah.
It is.
Or, yeah.
That the common standard attention should be revised regularly?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
What else? Okay, so far we're not using any of this.
This is a really, right, like, so, we are really passionate about this topic, let me tell you.
Yeah. Again, me. Yeah.
All right. So let's end with this. So what should parents know about state testing when they get those reports from their kid?
Just tell their kid to do their best and just do your best, because it's one form of evaluation.
Yeah,
but
and don't
it, it's not
state
yeah,
state
it's state not state. It's not your entire, it's not a tell all.
Right. What the kids should be doing is comparing their own score from 1 year to the next. Am I improving? And looking at it that way. Did I do better than last year?
Mm-hmm.
You know, like that. So I think that would be, that's the useful thing for a parent. And then parents can see like, oh, is my child making progress in math? Mm-hmm. Is my child making progress in reading? And if not, then that might be a way to
an indicator,
and then bringing that up to the school says, my kid seems to be struggling in reading. He hasn't made any progress in 3 years. What's going on? So yeah. I think for parents, maybe that would be the value there, is to be able to compare year to year. So don't throw those reports out, parents. Not to them.
Right. Yeah, I think that's true. It's important to see, because they can see the growth. We can see it. Well, that's a little easier to see now, because you can go back with the computer and you can actually see your student scores.
Right.
So you can see them if you can take the time to do that.
And on that note, I think we kind of summed it up pretty good. I don't know how you all feel about Common Core now. Maybe you'll have some other opinions on it, but I will put all of the links in the show notes that we use for reference to this, so people can read on that. There's some super interesting articles that are there that really go into a lot more detail. And I even went into the Department of Education and looked at some things that our Secretary of State, our Secretary of Education, Betsy DeVos, was saying about this back in 2018. She basically said that the Common Core is dead. So there's quite a bit of push, which kind of makes me wonder then, why are we still using it if so many people think it's dead? So maybe it's time we just put a stake in it.
Put a fork in it.
That was it. Not a steak, a fork.
I know. A steak. Let's put a big piece of meat.
It's a vampire.
Oh, okay. Well,
state testing vampires.
Well, it does feel like it sucks the life out of you, doesn't it? It does feel like that. Maybe it is sort of vampirism. Anyway. All right, you guys. I think we're going to call it quits there. And until we meet again, don't forget, if you enjoyed this episode, don't forget to like us and to give us a rating in Apple iTunes. And also subscribe. We need subscribers. Share it with your friends if you found this any value. If there's something you'd like to hear us discuss or something that you'd like to learn more about, could you please leave us a message so that we can get on that and get some feedback in from our listeners about what they'd like to hear. So on that
note, Anne's a pretty good researcher.
Well, what else do I have to do for 24 hours a day locked in my house with nobody here except me and my dog?
Oh man,
I can think of a lot of stuff to do.
But you know, you guys, we have been home now for 2 months. Okay.
Wow, has it been that long?
Yeah, it has been 2 months, and that's like our typical summertime, right? Is 2 months, and. I don't know. I'm finally feeling like kind of more relaxed, but kind of like more recluse also.
Yeah. You know?
Like more I don't really want to like participate in a lot of stuff and like all that chit chat on that group me.
Yeah.
It just bugs the shit out of me now.
I know. I don't even look. I forget about it. I don't even look at it.
I'm like, and it's and site-based, it's my job to remind you all of what you have to do. So I have to go on there and go, don't forget to do this. Don't forget to do that.
And you're very good at that. That's good. That's funny that you say it's 2 months and that would normally be a summer. And I feel like I have done nothing that's
right. Really
overly productive.
So. Yeah, exactly, right? So I'm just kind of hoping that as we go into summer, then summer will be more summer.
Mm. Well, I mean, even though we're home, it's like nonstop. You know what I mean? I've never had so many freaking meetings and blah, 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 blah. You know what I mean? I'm just like, man, I can't wait for school to be over.
Yeah,
it'll be over.
We'll be right back.